Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of Farming Aotearoa for 2025, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. And once again, I'm joined by agricultural journalist Peter Burke, who works for Rural News. And he's with me in the studio to bring us up to date on what's been happening in the past month. G'day, Pete.
G'day, Catherine. How are you? It's good to be here in Waikato on another lovely day when it's pouring with rain in Wellington. Sorry.
It is beautiful up
no
here.
No respect, disrespect to Wellington, of course.
Sorry, Wellington people. Yeah, they have good days too.
They have good days. He's after the southerly usually.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, just not as many as we do up here in
sunny
Waikanae.
No, anyway.
But we're not going to talk about Waikanae. We're going to go a little further afield.
Yes, we're going to talk about another W, but it's called Washington, actually. And it's the Trump, shall we say, scenario, whatever it might be.
Well, does this change every 5 minutes? I mean, this is going to be pretty tricky to report on, is it?
This is very hard to report on. You don't know what his brain is going to do next.
Goodness.
I don't think he does either, which is the tragedy of all. And that's why we've got a world run that's going around in circles. But so the issue for New Zealand at the moment, the big one for the primary sector, is the United States and Donald Trump and the US tariffs. Because Donald Trump has decided, or the Trump administration have decided, that all those countries that have a trade surplus with them are going to get hit by tariffs. And we are one. But although it's interesting to note that historically, it's been the other way around for many years. So this time they've caught us out and they've imposed a 15% tariff on all our stuff, which I think is absurd, quite frankly. And it's interesting that, you know, it's like punishing your best friend. Would you punch your best friend in the nose? Probably not.
No, I'd hope not. I'd get one back.
No, you'd get one back, but we can't, apparently. We're not allowed to punch bullies in the nose. So the 15% tariff that's being imposed on our primary sector is on top of existing tariffs. So it's not just 15%, it is 15% on top of what we've already got. And the comment being made by the pundits, people like Tim Grosser, who was a former New Zealand trade negotiator, former member of Parliament, Minister of Trade, is that we're not out of the woods yet. There may be more to come. That the 15% is what he calls a crude piece of economic nonsense, is the best way of describing it.
Is this so he can build a ballroom at the White House?
That's right. He was Minister of Foreign Affairs for good reason, but we won't go down that track. But anyway, New Zealand has done its best to sort of placate him, but it's not going to do that. It's not only New Zealand that's being hit by these tariffs, it's what other countries are being hit by too. And the implications for New Zealand are great. And I'll go in a minute and talk them dearly, but I'll talk in the meantime just a bit about that. There's an example now for New Zealand in, say, Vietnam, where we've been developing a very good market for apples. Vietnam, believe it or not, is the second biggest, largest market for New Zealand for apples, which is
really
quite amazing. And what's happened is that Vietnam has been hit by a 19% tariff. So that is fine, except that that 19% will somehow have an economic effect on Vietnam. And the question being asked now is, with all these tariffs being sprayed around the world, like you don't know what, the impact is not just the 15% on New Zealand and the States, it's the other tariffs that are being imposed on other countries and therefore having an economic effect on them, in which case their markets, and are those markets going to be viable for us? And the comment being made by Tim Grosser was, while we've seen economic growth go quite steadily for the last 10 years, we're not going to see the same pace of growth in any of our overseas markets for the next 5 years. So we're going to go into a period of a very slow incremental growth in developing new markets for our product, at the same time as we are actually, particularly in horticulture at least, ramping up our production. Our sheep and beef numbers are declining slightly, but while we're still declining in volume, the prices are moving up. We're heavily dependent on a good economic economies to sell our product in. I was talking to the former special agricultural trade envoy for New Zealand, Mike Peterson, who's very well connected worldwide. And he says it's going to be highly disruptive for New Zealand for the next number of years, this whole thing. He said the other thing is that even if there's a change of administration, if perchance Trump gets kicked out at some point, the 15% tariffs are likely to remain there. So this is something that's not going to go away in 3 years' time. It's going to be there forever. And this is really changing the whole nature of the world. So it's, you know, other countries are being advantaged over us. Traditional countries that have been, dare I say it, have been our competitors are now, and we have been successful against them, they're now going to come and beat us to the bush because they have a better deal
right.
by virtue of a whole lot of things, which we'll go to in a minute.
Okay.
What this means is that New Zealand's going to have to be very, very, dare I say it, nimble and agile as to take advantage of what's happening in the States, particularly, and in other markets. It's not just the States. In the States, we sell premium products in dairy and we sell premium products in meat, as well as we do also sell a lot of beef there, hamburger meat, basically, to our quality beef, hamburger meat, or mince meat, if you like. It's a better quality than the United States ones, and it's mixed with American beef for the hamburgers, which seems to be the perennial diet of most Americans. Hamburgers is what was the meat, lamb chops, or I don't know, lamb roast, or whatever it was. But anyway, that's it. So it's a really difficult situation, and this is really just causing chaos, and no one knows what's happening. The interesting thing is Todd McClay said the reason for it was that we have a surplus, a modest surplus of $500 million with the United States. It's a people on the elephant's hide, if you like, in terms of the United States economy. Yet there was no consideration for us whatsoever. And I know that the government has to be very careful in the words it uses, and we generally are too. But you've got to ask yourself, isn't it time for the bully got a punch in the nose?
Mm.
I don't know. But no one will do that because the fear is, and I heard a suggestion the other day, it was written, I was reading a piece from overseas, and they said that the Swiss had a, Prime Minister had a row with Trump. They were initially had 31% tariffs imposed on them. When she walked out, they imposed a 39% tariff on it, out of spite. So you've got that sort of situation where the guy is so unpredictable. It's, you know, I think hens, trying to marshal hens into a hen house is much more easy than trying to get a sensible word out of Trump, probably. If we turn to dairying, that's the latest one to be hit, and I'm talking to dairy people about it. We don't sell a huge amount of dairy product to America. They're about 5% of our product, of our stuff goes there. But it's very strong in certain areas. It's very strong in what we'd call the casein area. The concentrate proteins are the big thing for New Zealand, and that's what we have a big interest in. They're our number one, I think, for that in the world, ahead of China, actually. And we've got a 15% tariff imposed on those, but 15% on top of what is already there. But what's interesting when it comes to the dairy side is that the European Union, for example, has got a 15% tariff imposed on it. And you think that 15% is the same, but they're not. Because up until now, the EU had a higher tariff imposed on them. But because they had a higher tariff, the way the Trump administration are running it is they've dropped it down to 15%. So therefore, the European Union becomes much more competitive than New Zealand is in that market now, which is, you know, I have to say, bizarre. So in one case in particular, our products will face a 32% tariff into the States versus a 17% tariff in the European Union. You know, you just got to, you can't...
There's no fairness there.
There is no fairness, and yet we talk about how America's a friend of New Zealand. My understanding is, and I was reading a piece written by Jamison Greer, who was the special US trade representative, who made it very clear that this is not going to change, that we've made up our mind, this is our policy, we don't care if you don't like it, we don't care if you're badly affected, too bad. It is becoming very difficult because New Zealand is sending up, we've got a bunch of negotiators up there at the moment. I don't think they're not going to negotiate anything because we know that there'll be no negotiation around the 15%. I'm told, he said to someone, we're very lucky, Trump said to someone, you're lucky, you've only got 15%, it could be higher than that. So in other words, if we start to go into a negotiation and start to rant and rave, we're likely to get the same reception as
a
number
Swiss.
Of other countries have got when they've met face-to-face with them in the Oval Office. He's gone off his tree and abused them and shouted at them and everything like that. So the difficulty for New Zealand and all this stuff is politically, and I think the New Zealand government have played it very well, given their due. Winston, others have, despite the calls for others to say, get a bit tough, they've been diplomatic. Now, I don't have to be diplomatic, but they do, and that's fine. And I think they've handled it as best they can. The thing is to try and keep it at 15%.
Boy,
so that's like what you're dealing with, and so you're dealing with a very, very strange situation.
Very strange and volatile, by the sounds of it.
It is, and I think the other thing with all of this is that this has turned up. This is completely, I guess, overturned or turned up upside down the international dairy market, where now Canada can export into the US duty free. They also produce subsidised butter, which they're now able to sell on the international market at a cheaper price than we can, probably. So we're going to see a situation where we don't even know what's going to happen. No one has got an answer, and I think our officials are doing their best. They're some of the top trade negotiators in the world, let's be fair. They've done a very good job all along. The thing that everyone's going to have to be just very, very careful and just say, what do we do next? How do we get around this? We have diversified in the past, there's no doubt about it, that we go back in history, and I can go back to my early days in the European Union when all of our lamb was exported to Britain. And we then decided to go other ways. We went to places like Iran, believe it or not. We were quite big in Iran, other places. But with these economies also being affected by the Trump tariffs, and with the war in the Middle East, and with Ukraine, and with all the other shenanigans that are going on in the world, where is stability? I don't know where it is. It is just, you know... It is very strange. So we're in a very, very odd situation at the moment. And it's every day you think, I've got the story right, and you're wrong the next day. You just don't know where I don't know where I'm going. I'm walking a, you know, it's just like dancing over eggshells. It really is, because I've been following this for a long time now, and I've been following trade for a long time, and I've never seen such a chaotic situation as I've seen now. And this would go back 40-odd years to when we had the European, you know, when Britain joined the EU and EEC as it was, and I think it was, from memory, in the 50s, 53. But then there was other negotiations around 78. There wasn't the chaos there is now. There was certainty that there would be some hope. Today, the only certainty is uncertainty. Anyway, that's that bit. It's really quite, you know, quite a... And Australia, of course, are better off than we are because they had a free trade agreement with the States. Therefore, they got 10%. And their 10% is only on top of the very low... tariff that they already had with the States. So they're again advantaged to us
right.
in all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
So I don't like to put a dampener on the New Zealand economy, but don't expect it to bubble and, you know, squeak big. So that's the bad news.
Okay. You got any good news?
Yeah, I have. Actually, New Zealand finally got Canada to do something decent for the first time in about 4 years. Canada... has a subsidised dairy system and a system of internally controlling the price of its dairy products, which effectively preclude New Zealand from going there. And under the CPTPP agreement, Canada, of which Canada is a signatory and so are we, they were supposed to open up their market to us, and they wouldn't. And they lost a series of legal battles, and finally they've come down to the decision they've got to let us in. It's a bit late, really. It's not a big market for us, but it's still important. And the outcome of that, well, it will give us an extra 150-odd million bucks a year in income from the Canadian market. It's small compensation probably for what we'll lose in the States, I suspect. And then Canada may well yet have another go at us in other ways. But the Canadian dairy system is akin to Europe's in a way. It is highly subsidised at all levels. And they, unlike New Zealand, which is a straight market delivered system. So that is the good news, I suppose. But anyway, we'll never know. It's a challenging situation. The other bit of good news also is that New Zealand signed an agreement with Indonesia around agricultural cooperation. This is really not a trade deal. This is about working with the Indonesians around agricultural areas such as science, research and development and so forth. Which is a prelude, possibly, to some better arrangement coming up trade-wise with them. And I would expect this sort of thing to happen probably in relation to India as well, that New Zealand will come in and say, look, how can we help your industry? And as they get it going, then probably the word will come that, yes, OK, let's talk about trade. Trade will come onto the agenda. But this is, the foot in the door in terms of what it might be for Indonesia. And that's a positive side, too. So there's a little bit of positivity out there. But yeah, you know, it's McClay went up there. McClay's also off this week, I think, up to Washington as well to try and talk to his counterparts up there. But I don't think we're going to see anything more than a bit of, I wouldn't call it political theatre, that's not fair, but I don't think we're going to see him come back with a piece of paper and say, we've got a better deal, we're down 10%. I just don't believe that will happen. If he does, then, you know, he should be nominated for the Nobel Enterprise Award of the Year. You know, that would be amazing. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. So, all right, so what else has been going on?
Well, there's some interesting things happening on the farming side around the Resource Management Act, which is a big thing, as you probably know. And that's one of the areas where Federated Farmers and all the other farming groups have been concerned around the track that has been... The Act, let's say, is an old Act. It goes back 40-odd years, I think, from memory. And there's been attempts to try and tinker with it. But the present government has decided that certain aspects of it need to be dealt with now, because what was happening was some of the districts, regions, were starting to produce their plans, or district plans, which, when the Act comes into effect in a couple of years' time, will be redundant. So what the government said is stop it. Now, this is not good news for some people who are consultants doing work, but and I know that from a personal perspective. But what it's stopping is there were councils that were ignoring the government quiet message to say, just leave it alone, don't do it. I know Otago was one of them, I think, from memory. Others were doing the same. The government has now said, right, stop it. End of story, you can't do it. This is trying to just to stop some things coming into play which will simply be redundant. I mean, in other words, the comment from Federated Farmers is it's just a, you know, it's a waste of time, waste of ratepayers' money to do all this work and then find it's just out the door in 40 minutes' time. So that is what's happening there. And I think the delay, it gives the farmers clarity at least that there is a stop on the silly stuff happening for a while until the new stuff comes in. The new stuff will take a while to get through. I don't think the RMA is a big piece of, well, the new RMA, it's split two ways. It's a very big piece of legislation. But they're not, the councils are not allowed to notify any more freshwater planning instruments before December 25. After that, they're gone. It's a simple way of, you know, of getting some sense into an area which has annoyed farmers. We've had a lot of silliness from councils around rules and regulations. Inconsistency is common. If you have a farm that's in one region and in another, you'll find different set of rules probably on half your farm. That's what you get.
Well, that's a bit crazy.
It's frustrating, and you get the same with districts at the moment, that, you know, if you're trying to develop a business, you'll be operating under a different set of rules, which is hardly the great idea to do. So the aim of this whole thing by government is to try and put some sanity into it. Obviously, some of the environment parties are not happy with it. They think that should be not tampered with, but it's not going to happen. It's simply that's what it is. So it's going that direction. We're here. I think the Trump thing is sort of overlaid into this now at the moment.
Right.
There's a lot of other things happening around farming. And we're coming into that sort of conference season now, so we'll talk a bit about that later. Other bits and pieces, there's a bit of improvement in farmer confidence, which is interesting.
Okay.
I think that survey was taken before we heard about Trump, actually. I'm not so sure they're going to be. Although there was a comment made to me by, I think, Damien O'Connor made it to me, saying something like, it'll be quite a while before these things start to trickle through to farmers. And I think the issue you've got to look at in this is, if we've got this... these tariffs here, how can New Zealand get around them? I mean, the good news is that we've got very good quality products. They're premium products by and large. The chances are there's talk saying that the consumer should pay the extra tariff, not should be shared. I think it will be shared probably, but to what degree we don't know. But hopefully if we're going for the premium market on some of our products, it may not have too much effect. We just don't know. It's a case of tossing up. But that's happened. Before that, farmers were saying, well, you know, things are better. They are. 33% of farmers believe because they currently could, which was the minus the previous 12 months. So that's a big jump. Profitability is better than it was. That's a good sign. We know the dairy has been very good. There's been a good year for dairy, jumped up massively. Sheep and beef is making its way to the top. And horticulture was making some significant jumps. There was a 19% increase in horticultural exports in the last 12 months. It's not going to happen this coming year, but horticulture is the one area where we're seeing significant increases, annual increases in earnings. And it's not going to catch up in the short term with sheep and beef, but it's not going to be too far away. It's moving quite well towards that. So, so not surprisingly that farmers are feeling positive, and orchard is the same, I'm sure. So that's where that sits. Some will break even, others will not. That's that bit of it. The other issue around rural at the moment, of course, is policing. And you've heard the situation down in Canterbury where farmers are very concerned about the thought that that there might be a closure of rural police stations, and that there have been some significant meetings down in Christchurch in Canterbury about that. Deeply concerned that the local police are trying to restructure their rural coverage. It raises an issue, really. That's one of the issues. And I think farmers naturally are a long way away from help. You know, you get break-ins to your sheds, you get your ATV stolen, you get your machinery damaged, you get your stock stolen, all those sort of things. And not to have a cop locally.
Yeah.
I think that's strange. I can't see having a patrol car sitting 50 k's away or 20 k's away to cover it is not the way to go. Those people will not know who the local crims are probably as well. The local cop does. He'll know who's what, or she'll know who's the problems and deal with it. But it does raise the issue that rural people generally are on the back foot.
Yeah.
If you look at the latest thing on the shortage of cardiologists, for example, it's rural areas that are very badly hit. I look at Tairawhiti, I looked at Taranaki, I look at Whanganui being areas that are very badly hit, and the West Coast the same. And it seems that health, education, everything is worse if you live in a rural area. If you've got to travel 2 hours to a doctor, or if you've got to get an appointment, mental health, getting help for mental health is big, hard, difficult, and the isolation is not conducive to getting things done quickly in some cases. And I'm not so sure that this is the brightest thing that the police have ever done. But who knows? There may be a better way. But I think there's at least the perception of the public is that if there's policemen on the beat, they're safe. Now, they may not be any safer, but it's not about reality, it's about perception. Politics is not about reality. It's far from reality. It's a complete, it's a drama. It's a television comedy from day one. Anyone who's worked in local government or central government knows that the Yes Minister is not a comedy. It's a documentary, and I've been through it. I worked in both local and central government, and I can assure you that the Yes Prime Minister is absolutely a documentary. I wouldn't advise anyone to do a degree in political science. I just encourage them to buy the Yes Minister series from the warehouse and watch it for 3 weeks, and they have the best degree they'll ever have. But anyway, that's a bit of a thing of it. Naughty, but
yes, you've gone off topic there a tiny bit.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make the point though that the rural areas don't get the same service that people in urban areas get,
absolutely.
And urban areas people take it for granted and they should be entitled to it. But if you have a heart attack in Tairawhiti, you might not survive it, you know. And those areas are disadvantaged areas. Let's be fair, Tairawhiti in particular. So I have a lot of sympathy for the farmers saying that and pushing the cops to say, come on, listen to us, you know, we're in the front line as much as you are here, so, you know, anyway.
So we've got a little bit of time left. You were going to talk about stress in Tasman
it's
the floods?
Yes, I am, and I think it's interesting that we're still, it's easy for stories like floods to sort of get left off the agenda, that we have the flood and we see television for 2 nights and that's all over and done with.
They move on.
We move on, but we're still seeing the effects of this. It's not over yet. Mm. And there's a lot of stress in the Tasman area at the moment, and it's still there because farmers and orchards are still trying to rebuild their properties. They're still trying to get their infrastructure back, their tracks on their farms. They're trying to rebuild them, refence their properties. So that is still something that is going on. And I suspect as the longer it gets going, we're going to see the mental health of people. You know, the stress is going to show. How much can you spend? You know, the cost of doing some of this is astronomical. And they had a very difficult situation where they had one lot of floods. They started to repair their stuff, and next minute the rain came down the next week and washed it all out. And that's demoralising for a start. And a lot of these places are very isolated, so we know that. It's hard to get access to them. It's costly to get things done. I heard the other day that they're recycling fence posts, which is a way of, they can get cheap fence posts by recycling some of those that have been torn out. So they're helping farmers to get cheaper materials to do that. But I know one farmer had 6 kilometres of fencing wiped out. That's a lot of fencing.
That's a lot of fencing.
And it's like we saw up in Te Rāwhiti where, I don't know what it's like down in Tasman, exactly the same, but Te Rāwhiti, for example, you'd put a fence in on the hillside and the hillside would move again. So you could never really do permanent fencing.
Yeah.
And when you haven't got paddocks, then it creates all sorts of problems around how you manage your stock.
Mm.
Are you going to, you know, the lambs that should be in paddock A to get fattened might be mixed with those that need or don't need it. And those things have an impact longer term down the track for farmers who are trying to somehow or another make a quid. Horticulture's also had a big hit down there too. But the plus for horticulture was a little bit that the event occurred outside of the harvest season.
Yeah.
And that was a bonus.
Yeah.
However, it doesn't mean that there's not a big problem, because we saw in Hawke's Bay that even trees that suffered after the event because they got wet feet, they got root rot and that sort of thing. The good news a little bit is that some of the lessons from Hawke's Bay and are being taken to down to Tasman, and some of the ideas that were tried and proved to be right up in Hawke's Bay are being applied now in that area. And hopefully we're going to see the chance of a slightly higher rate of survival among some of the apple trees and some of the kiwi fruit vines, others, hops is another one, of course, blueberries is another crop down there. They will hopefully survive a little bit better. Who knows? It depends how much salt they've been under, how long they've been underwater, all those things. But there are remedies for that, and we saw that. So there's a lot going on. I think just to find the end today a little bit is to say that we're now coming up to a couple of conferences. The horticulture conference is on a couple of weeks in Wellington, a big time there. And Ahu Whenua will be there launching the Ahu Whenua competition for 2026, which is for horticulture. And the Young Māori Grower of the Year is also coming up. So that'll be the next few weeks coming up. There's lots of conferences, lots of functions. And then, of course, they're into calving now, and there'll be lambing next. So we'll be Baba Black Sheep.
Lots of sheep around where I am. Loads of lambs.
Oh, God.
Yeah, someone let the
ram, a bit early,
the ram out way early.
Oh, well, they're there. They won't miss an opportunity. Oh, the opportunity's party, aren't they?
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that. And look forward to next month's update.
Indeed. Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.